Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon.
And what's cracking up, James Coe? Join us on Reception Perception as we dive deep into wide receivers, the position that will make or break your fantasy team.
Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Live from the Rivers Casino Sportsbook, it is the PM team, solo Chris Muller, as it has been all week and will be tomorrow. Andrew Filippone, he is wrapping up his final week of parental leave, hanging with baby Stella. I think you can call her a baby until she turns two, if memory serves. So I think my younger son, Ace, just became a toddler officially. I think you can go with baby until they are 2 years old, then they become a toddler. Then at some point they graduate from toddler status to being something else altogether, mainly a loud, yelling, smart-mouthed little stinker, which is my five-and-a-half-year-old. But right now he's still hanging with baby Stella. And I think they're at the library today was his update for us. It is, starting in 9 minutes, a counter-programming Thursday here on the PM team. Why? Paul Skeens and the Pirates going for the series victory against the Brewers on 100.1 FM and AM 1020 KDKA, News Radio, AM 1020 KDKA. So it's counter-programming kind of Thursday. That means we will go all over the map talking about this, that, and the other. But I will start with a couple of minutes to go before that game starts by mentioning the following things about this game. Just quick thoughts on Pirates-Brewers. You have a chance if you get what you've been getting from Paul Skeens and you give him more than the zero runs you put up yesterday, if you're the Pirates. You have a real chance to, whatever degree you think appearances matter for a team, a real actual chance to go into the All-Star break. Granted, you'd have to sweep a team to do it. The White Sox are bad, however. You have a chance to get in there if you win today at 500. You have an outside chance. They're 44-48 are the Pirates right now. They once again we'll go at least one more game without being at risk of losing two or winning, losing three or winning three games in a row. But I think it's important for the Pirates to do what they haven't always done when Skeens or even Keller or Jared Jones, when he was healthy, was on the mound. That's beat a team when you get what you expect to get from Paul Skeens today. Which, for me, my kind of baseline for Paul Skeens now in almost every start is he's probably going to pitch six innings or more, and he's probably going to give up two runs or less. That is, by any definition, a very good start every time you get something like that. Pirates have to win this baseball game. If you're a team, you know, you could be a team that tells everybody, we intend to contend. You could be a team that says, we urgently want to win. You can be a lot of different things in word. But indeed, if you want to be a team that contends, you have to win games like this. That's the bottom line. Aaron Civale is not a good pitcher by the numbers. You can look at him however you want. He just isn't good. He's probably one of the weakest pitchers in that lineup. Civale, by the way, did that to the Pirates when he was With Tampa Bay, actually, excuse me. So that was a that was right before he got acquired by Milwaukee. He's probably the worst pitcher they've got by the numbers. And when he was with Tampa Bay, he silenced the Pirates. That was a frustrating game to watch. And, you know, you look at everything about him, 2-6. The whip is up there near kind of pushing 1.5. He's a gettable pitcher on a day like today. And when you have your ace going against a pitcher who, at least by the numbers, is gettable, who you saw not that long ago and actually, you know, didn't do much off of in 5 innings, my hope would be that you went to school a little bit, all your hitters, figured out some things about what went wrong against him the first time and just fixed that. That's where I come down, though, on this game. Fancy yourself an actual contender. Fancy yourself a team that's going to be in it until the end in the wild card race. Win this baseball game. No excuses. No, well, they're the Brewers. You know, they got back at us. We beat them 12-2. They beat us 9-0. Win this game. You should win this game. Most people would expect you to win this game, given what Savali is as a pitcher. Especially since he's put up most of those numbers with Tampa Bay. And now he's in a House of Horrors ballpark for lots of pitchers where the ball flies out of there. Had one guy in the Brewers yesterday hit a ball that one-hopped the fence. It looked like he hit it about one-handed, down and away, not even a bad pitch, and it gets ridden almost out of the ballpark. Beat this guy up. Make it an easy game for Paul Skenes, as a matter of fact. Knock Aaron Savali around. Let this be, I don't want to say a laugher. It's always hard to like really feel good about games until you have one like that 12-2 game in Milwaukee, because they can come back in a moment's notice. Even against a guy like Skenes, you never know. Make it kind of a comfortable win. Then you've got it. Then at 45-48, I think you go into this saying, we better get 2 out of 3. That would be 47-49. Then you start to feel like you're pushing a little bit, like you're getting on a slight roll before the All-Star break. And you're maybe going to be a team to be, not reckoned with, but a team that doesn't get dismissed out of this thing. You know, the Pirates got lucky yesterday that the Royals swept a doubleheader from the Cardinals, which kept St. Louis within striking distance and kind of didn't let them run away and hide. If the opposite had happened, I think you'd feel a lot worse today. This is just, it's an opportunity for the Pirates. I think you also, you look at a team like Milwaukee, what they usually do to the Pirates in their building. And I think it warrants mentioning that there's been mostly a hex for the Pirates in that place. That there have been years where the Brewers were really good and just tortured the Pirates. There have been years where the Brewers weren't as good and still had success against the Pirates. I think they prove something to themselves if they go into this game and they actually give a good accounting of themselves, win a business-like affair. So there's some quick thoughts on Pirates and Brewers. And as soon as that game goes final, I will say this. Soon as that one is done, we will have reaction to it for you here on 93.7 The Fan. Give you a reaction to what Paul Skenes does in this game. We're in a perfect place to watch it right now. Rivers Casino Sportsbook. See if the Pirates can get 2 of 3. Now, having said that, because Paul Skenes is pitching, but you're not going to hear it here, it's Counter-Programming Thursday. Which means, in our business, it's very simple. Something that, you know, is on another station, you program such that people who don't want to listen to that thing for whatever reason would hear something that they would want to hear. You talk about the other teams in town. That is counter-programming. Station A is doing B, your station C, you do D. We are going to do that today. Charlie Gorgeous Borges is producing. He's up for the task. Means a healthy dose of hockey, of football, of stupidity, which you might argue is something you get a healthy dose of when I'm talking, no matter what the subject matter is. You're going to get that today on a very formal. We announce this to you. It's a counter-programming Thursday. When I announce it, you know that that's what you're going to get. When I'm not even trying to make a joke about it, I'm just saying, nope, that's exactly what's happening. You can rest assured I'm going to deliver. So, to that end, ESPN, I've said this for a couple days now, has been gearing you up for training camp starting for every team by running through lists of top 10 at each position. We already talked about T.J. Watt being second to Myles Garrett among edge rushers. There are a couple more that are out there right now that I think are interesting. Minka Fitzpatrick is one of them. He was last year's number one safety. And remember, this isn't a fan poll. This also isn't, as Ken Carman in Ohio said on Twitter, this isn't a jury of his peers. He was trying to talk about Myles Garrett beating out T.J. Watt in a poll conducted by his peers. Myles Garrett is not a player personnel executive. He's not a scout, and he is not a coach. So this is not his peers. These are people making decisions. But Minka Fitzpatrick, in a ranking done by people inside the game, done by people with a high-level understanding of the game, rank among safeties, took a dive. Minka Fitzpatrick last year, number one when ESPN did this little exercise. Minka Fitzpatrick this year, fourth when ESPN did this exercise. And the Cliff's Notes version of why Minka Fitzpatrick dropped three spots was pretty simple. People felt like he was on a Hall of Fame track. People still felt like he was a playmaker, a force out there on the field. But they felt like most of that stuff was not actually in evidence last season. That he was down playing in the box too much. That he wasn't able to roam free and actually get in quarterbacks' heads. And all of that, I would agree with. Antoine Winfield Jr. was number one. Kyle Hamilton, who's emerged as a big weapon for the Ravens, number two. Jesse Bates, long time with the Bengals, but now with the Falcons, was number three. And then Minka, then Javon Holland of Miami, was fifth. That's your top five. Terrell Austin has already made it clear that Minka Fitzpatrick is going to be down, is going to be more in his traditional posture in this season. That the Steelers' strong intention is for him to do what they feel he does best, which is affect football games by playing away from the line of scrimmage, by ball hawking, and by just generally being a playmaker and not a tackle maker. And too many times when things are going bad, you can kind of get a sense of what the Steelers' defense is by how Minka Fitzpatrick functions. If he is having to make tackles on running backs or plays 8 yards down the field, and he is being maybe dragged by a player and not delivering a hit, you can more or less say that things aren't going so well. It seems that they understand that if you're going to pay a guy $18 million a year at one position, he better be put in a position then to do what he does best that actually makes him close to worth that money. These lists that ESPN did, though, got me thinking about something else. So T.J. Watt was the second best edge rusher in the game. That is a very important position. Minka Fitzpatrick, the fourth best safety on this team, or in this poll of executives and coaches and scouts. And safety, ultimately, at the highest end, isn't like cornerback in terms of importance, but it is a very premium position if you have one of the elite guys. They've also, ESPN, done this for defensive tackles, where you might be interested to know Cam Hayward is included. He is considered more of an interior guy than any kind of an edge guy because they play a 3-4. Even though he usually plays on the outside of that a little bit, he is considered more of an interior player by them. Cam Hayward was an honorable mention. He did not fall among the top 10 interior defensive linemen, tackles, if you will, on this list. But he was still in that top 15. So there are three major positions on defense where the Steelers have the number two guy in the league, among people in the league, the number four guy, and a top 15 guy. There are still positions yet to be revealed. You look at all this, and you think about the pedigree that they have in certain places, and I think a question emerges. How much pressure is this team under this year? Because when you think of just the individual singular names at certain spots on the roster, Fitzpatrick, Watt, Hayward, a splashy ad in Patrick Queen, a receiver everyone is still waiting to break out in a huge way in George Pickens, like a monster breakout. Just to name a handful. They've got some first and last names. They've got some back of the baseball card guys lined up on this team already. There has been a lot of praise, including from me, for the work that Omar Khan has done. There has been, I think, a sense created around this team that the Steelers have done a pretty aggressive and pretty good job of rebuilding themselves via the draft. That in 2 years, at least on paper, what it looks like Omar Khan has done is mostly positive. That while there are holes, there's a clear, different plan in place, a new sheriff in town, however you really want to term it, and that better times are ahead. I think part and parcel with that is the idea that the Steelers have more of a true sense of direction than they maybe had at the end of the Ben Roethlisberger era, when it feels like a lot of the aim and the goal was try to give Ben one more shot at glory, do some quick fixes, some spackle. Like, you ever seen a house that gets built, that gets renovated, but you can tell they just tried to do a surface deep job? They didn't really go hard with, we're going to, you know, rip the guts out of this thing, rebuild them the right way, and then put nice finishes over. You just kind of, I lived in one of those houses once. Great place to live, except when the bills came due because there was no insulation. I think at the end of that era, this team was trying to paper over some weaknesses. I think now there is a sense that they have a direction, that they're doing it the right way, that they've addressed the offensive line, that they're trying to address the defensive line. They excised the Matt Canada problem. They sent Kenny Pickett away. They brought in Arthur Smith, who at bare minimum has real, honest-to-God name recognition and a track record, albeit with one of the greatest running backs ever, but a track record of being a good offensive coordinator. They have fixed some major issues. I think locally there is a sense of optimism that's building, that things are heading in the right direction after maybe a couple of listless years in the wilderness, not just on the field, but in terms of the off-the-field kind of behavior. So there's guys who rank highly. There are first and last names you recognize. You just say Watt, you say Minka, you say Cam. People know who you're talking about in almost every city. How much pressure is this team under a couple weeks out from training camp in terms of the direction of this franchise as it pertains to winning a playoff game, as it pertains to Mike Tomlin, Omar Khan entering year three at the helm, two drafts down. How much pressure is this team under to actually perform? How big of a year is this, in your opinion, for the Pittsburgh Steelers? Because I'd argue it's pivotal. I'd argue you should start already seeing some results from both Omar Khan drafts, including this year's, because I think there's some plug-and-play guys that were put in, that were picked. Guys that they expect to have an impact immediately. That's the way of the NFL anymore. It's not the way the Steelers used to do it. It's the way most people do it, though, now. 412-928-9370. That's the Fan Text Line. It's brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, personal injury law firm, where they always say, there's never a fee unless we get money for you. How much pressure, how big of a year is this, in your opinion, for the Steelers, for Tomlin, even for Khan, and for this team's fortunes heading into the future? For Russell Wilson, Justin Fields. Live from the Rivers Casino Sportsbook, a counter-programming Thursday on the PM team, Chris Muller. Hit us up on Twitter if you want, at 93.7TheFan. That's brought to you by South Hills Kia, Peters Township. Visit them, southhillskia.net. We got a nice little bench developing here at the Fan. Donnie, of course, was pulled off the bench to host the Starkey show, the Joe Starkey show, that I guess if it were like a rap album would say featuring Paul Zeiss, because they're both out today. Paul is coaching basketball, and Joe is just, I'm assuming, playing golf, just because that's a safe bet. He and Austin Bechtold apparently drawing rave reviews from the Twitter crowd that they were basically a vibe, that those guys were sounding good together. I've got Charlie Gorgeous Borges fast rising the ranks of producers in this building. And then I feel like right now in a day like today, I'm actually in the presence of royalty. T-Bird is producing down here. That's right, Fan hot dog eating champion T-Bird is on the ones and twos on location with me. And I'll tell you what, folks, this guy has not let victory go to his head. He's just sitting there. He's kind of looking at me impassively like, yeah, I know, I won the hot dog eating contest. Do you feel like your life has changed, T-Bird, since this happened?
No.
No?
Nah, man, I'm still doing me, just chilling.
You really are like a guy who could have been Fast Times at Ridgemont High, you know that? I mean, I don't know if you, like, try extra hard to cultivate that, but you work, your job technically is on-site producer. You're an engineer, though, here. You're in your early 20s, and so you have a very complex technical job, and yet you come off like a guy who's just coasting on vibes.
That's pretty much it.
Well, I wanted to acknowledge you because I did feel like I was in the presence of at least culinary royalty today with you here.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome, T-Bird. You are very welcome. I have humongous news in hockey talk for you next. Charlie Borges doesn't even know about this. I prepped Charlie Borges, and we are still going to do what I prepped him for hockey talk coming up in a couple of seconds. But I've got a massive, massive story that we are going to be discussing coming up in about 10 minutes. So make sure you stay tuned for that because this is a big one, folks. That's all I got to say. This is a big, big, big story in hockey talk. Just a couple other stray thoughts, though, about the Steelers. And this really all came to me, just this idea of how much of a pressure-packed season is this for one reason. It came to me because I kept looking at these ESPN lists, and I like this kind of content that ESPN puts out because, to me, it's a good use of their resources. They take the fact that they can get lots of different people on the line, you know, to talk to them about this stuff, anonymously, of course, but they have so much access to so many different executives. They have such a network of beat writers. They can get a real good sense for these, test the league out, how does the league feel about X, Y, and Z. When they do these, it's really comprehensive. So I'm reading this, and I'm always engaged by it because it's just interesting to get that perspective on various players, especially when there are Steelers named. Like, they wrote very nice things about Watt. I mean, Watt was praised up and down. Fitzpatrick was praised. If you're in the top 10, you get a blurb written about you, so there was not much about Cam Hayward. He was honorable mention, but basically it was the same kind of read we have on him here. But seeing enough Steelers names at big spots on the field. Edge rusher's a huge one. Safety's still a very big one. All the positions are important, but some are more valued than they used to be. Some are devalued compared to what they used to be. It just got me thinking that, you know, I and many others in town, and I think a lot of people have taken notice of what Omar Khan has done. The Steelers have been, by their standards, hyperactive in terms of rebuilding their roster. They completely eradicate last year's quarterback room and bring in new guys who have, at bare minimum, I talked about first and last name type of guys to open the show. Fields, by draft pedigree, very much a first and last guy. And Russell Wilson, by career pedigree, very much a first and last guy. Or you just say Russ to an NFL fan, they know who you're talking about. They've done all this stuff. I think they have largely been viewed positively, even inside our fishbowl here where we talk about every move, you know, down to the granular details, to minute detail. They've been talked about so positively. You have to start, I think, right away, basically saying, okay, now's the time where you actually have to apply pressure here and show that you're going to yield something out of all this. It almost feels like it has to be a playoff win minimum this year. Other teams have done it, too. That's the thing. The NFL is known that it's a known thing that every year a handful of teams, usually four teams, new ones, make the playoffs after not making it. And the Steelers make it or are in the mix pretty much every year. We all know the stats about how few true meaningless regular season games there are for the Steelers under Mike Tomlin. I would say that the time for, I guess, reaping praise about how you've recovered or rebuilt from the end of the Roethlisberger era is probably at an end. Still a lot of pieces a lot of teams would like, and even if you don't have a set situation or a, I guess what you'd call a solid situation at the most important position on the field, you still upgraded it from last year. You got to win. I think it's the most pressure-packed season for Mike Tomlin in several. I think it's the first year for Omar Khan now that he's had two drafts under his belt. Now you started to see how he's remolded this team in his sort of image and likeness. He and Andy Weidel both. I think it has to start bearing fruit. They need to be a team that takes over the line of scrimmage, frankly. That's where they've put a lot of their kind of money where the mouth is here with those two. They need to start showing it. You're probably going to start, if not at the very outset of the season, pretty early in the season, you're going to have a pair of rookies starting, a guy who is starting at what was his true position for the first time in the NFL, in Frazier and Fautanu, and then Jones on the left side. And then you're probably going to have a guy in Mason McCormick you would figure pushing for playing time at one of those guard spots based on what we've heard about him very early on. You add all of this up, and while there are holes, there are still elements that I think almost any NFL observer would like. The time for results is pretty much here, which is, I'm sure, a sentiment shared by our caller right now. He's calling in as his real self. We're not getting somebody in Aliquippa pretending to be a lady. We're not getting some guy pretending to have an alliterative name. It's the man himself, Johnny the Barber. Hello, Johnny.
Hello, fellas. And I wanted to say, Charlie, you do a great job, man. I do like that, Charlie. I just wanted to know, are the Steelers fans really, really butthurt over Myles Garrett being, you know, placed at a level above T.J. Watt? I mean,
I don't think
this is from scouts.
No, I know, Johnny. It's from the people who make decisions. I don't know. I'll answer your question seriously. That's the funny part here, because we usually never do this. They wrote, I think, fair stuff about Garrett. I actually thought their write-up was really good. They said they had a better team around him, so you just noticed how good he is more. I thought they wrote very nice stuff about T.J. Watt, frankly. I mean, a guy in that blurb.
He's great. I'm not going to argue that.
Well,
he's great.
I mean, I think if people looked at the rankings, they got reflexively pissed off, like most people do when this debate happens. But if you read the actual blurb where you've got a guy saying, for me, he's just the hardest to block player in the entire NFL, you can't say he's like a high-motor guy, you just got to say he's impossible to block, I think people can respect that.
I think what the Steelers fans lose is the focus on that Myles Garrett gets his defense off the field. He's 3-and-out. They don't have these prolonged drives and you know, five different, completed third
downs. For a while, their defense was historically great last year. They did start to cave in a little bit at the end, as I'm sure you know, but their defense was historically great.
Folded like a lawn chair.
What's that?
Yeah, they folded like a lawn chair.
Yeah, well, I think he won the award because of how insane the start of their season was. I definitely think it was like building a big lead in a race and then just coasting to the finish. Johnny, the one thing I will say about this is, it's a sad state of affairs for the Steelers when, because of a lack of postseason success, the main thing people have to get mad about is player individual rankings. And that's all I have to say about that. Anything you'd like to finish with, though?
O-H-I-O.
Johnny the Barber. I have a feeling Ryan Day, because Ohio State, as I think Starkey said, spent more than several NFL teams in free agency. I think Ohio State's finally going to make Johnny a happy fan, a happy Buckeye fan. I feel like this is, if they don't win it this year, you can ride Ryan Day out of town on a rail in Columbus. Coming up, hockey talk. Now, I had a plan with Charlie Gorgeous Borges for what we were going to do in hockey talk, and we'll still do it, but I have a massive piece of breaking hockey news, breaking Penguins news specifically, and I will tell you what that is coming up next. First, here's Charlie with a fan headline.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon.
And what's cracking up, James Coe? Join us on Reception Perception as we dive deep into wide receivers, the position that will make or break your fantasy team.
Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex Grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex Grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
All right, it's time for Hockey Talk here on the PM team, live from Rivers Casino Sportsbook. It's bumping down here. You got people taking in various baseball games. There's golf. There's Wimbledon. There's everything. Come to Flipped, eat a burger, watch sports, bet on sports. Very good. It's kind of what you're looking for, right? Bob Pompiani, expect him to join us in just over a half hour. Keep that Hockey Talk bed going, Borges. I don't want to stop hearing it. I want to hear more Hockey Talk. I want to hear more NHL 94. I can hear it faintly. All right, good enough. All right, you ready for this earth-shattering story I've got for you, Charlie?
I think I saw it already, but I am ready for it.
What you're supposed to say there, if you actually did see it already, is, yes, I'm ready, Mulsey, and then pretend you didn't see it. The Penguins have made a seismic move. They've made a trade. Some would say an upgrade, T-Bird. The Penguins have announced Coca-Cola will be the official in-arena beverage provider. And so now it's going to be at PPG Paints Arena, UPMC Lemieux Sports Complex. You'll get Coke, Coke Zero, Diet Coke, Sprite, Seagram's, Minute Maid Lemonade, Gold Peak, and Fanta Orange. You know what that means? The death of RC Cola at PPG Paints Arena. Royal Crown. The crown has been deposed. The king has been dethroned. What do you make of this, Charlie? This is bigger than the French Revolution.
Well, I think it would be more monumental if I still drank soda, but I have not had a soda since December 30th of 2023. So it's been about 7 months since I've had one. But
Hold on a second. Stop.
Yeah.
I understand if somebody has quit drinking alcohol that they might have the date. And, in fact, I know they'd have the date, and that would be a sacred date for them. I get that. I know why that's a serious piece of business. Why do you know the exact date where you had your last can of pop?
Because it was something that I wanted to do to stop drinking soda. I would have, like, a wild cherry Pepsi a day, and I didn't feel good, so I stopped drinking it before the new year. And I didn't have one on the 31st, but I had one out at dinner on the 30th, and that's the only reason why I remember it.
So was it a wild cherry Pepsi was your last one?
I think it was a Sierra Mist.
So you're going to remember, do you ever think you will fall off the pop or soda wagon again, or do you think that Sierra Mist is probably the last time you will ever have a sugary carbonated beverage in your life?
I feel like I will have a soda again, but not in the near future. I've done it before where I've gone cold turkey and not drank a soda before for a long time. I think my longest streak was 2.5 years.
So this is wild. I mean, just the fact that you've got the date picked out here is incredible to me. Now, you could have Minute Maid lemonade there because that's part of the offering.
I do like lemonade.
You know what T-Bird did? He went over. He was getting himself. What are you drinking, T-Bird? A Coke? Right now?
Yeah, I got a Coke.
Okay. T-Bird got me a little Arnold Palmer. He got me the lemonade and iced tea mix. Of course, no vodka in it. That would be a John Daly. But T-Bird hooked it up down here at Rivers Casino. All right, Charlie. The other thing we are actually going to do here in Hockey Talk, besides note that RC Cola has been dethroned within PPG Paints Arena, and thank God for that. Not a fan. Not a fan at all. Is this. I saw this meme going around, and the person I saw posting it was a Flyers fan, and so they were very self-deprecating, and they were essentially posting all negative moments from the franchise's history. But it was in four pictures, give me like four frozen moments from your franchise's history. And they had like Stevens destroying Eric Lindros, Darren McCarty scoring against the Flyers in the finals, the Blackhawks celebrating in 2010, stuff like that. I am going to give you my four frozen moments for the Penguins, but because you're a Jersey Devils fan, I want your four frozen moments, and I don't want one of them to be just Marty Brodeur before the trapezoid during the trap clearing a puck while the Devils are up 2-0 and their opponent has gotten 8 shots on goal through 44 minutes, okay?
I've never heard that joke before, but I'm ready.
I've got my four Penguins. First one, frozen moment. It's Lemieux mid-deke in the 1991 Stanley Cup Finals. Goes all the way end-to-end. I think it was John Casey was the North Stars goalie. The rush up the ice is incredible, but the move on Casey at the end is just disgusting and something very few people who've ever played the game at that size could actually hope to do, which is why he is the single most physically gifted player who's ever set foot in or set skate in an NHL rink. You like that as number one?
I don't mind it.
Mid-deke. Number two.
Yeah.
Well, these are frozen moments. So the snapshot is he's mid-deke. He's about to go and put the puck in the net. Number two, it could be the best frozen moment. The image of Fleury diving to his right. The puck is already off of Lidstrom's stick. It's in the air, and Fleury is diving and smothering it in Game 7 of the 09 Cup Final. Your thought there?
That should be number one.
Fine, I'll change it. That's number one. Number three on this list. Again, frozen moments from Penguins history because I saw a meme, and it's a counter-programming Thursday. Kasparaitis diving across the ice and sliding in there and all that other stuff after he beat Hasek in Game 7 to beat the Sabres in overtime and send the Penguins to the next round.
He always scared me. He was one of those players when you watched your team play another team that you didn't want to see.
He's also, if you're talking about like the greatest disparity between great goalie and bad offensive player scoring a goal on great goalie, is he up there for number one on that list?
Yeah, him, maybe Brad May.
Was Uwe Krupp a really good offensive defenseman? Didn't he score the winning goal in the 96 final over Van Beesbrook and the Panthers?
Yeah, but I think if anybody scored that goal,
they
were just – the Panthers should not have been there.
Well, that's true. And who did they beat to get there? Ah, yes, let's not even talk about it. My fourth one, I was struggling to think of a fourth frozen moment from Penguins franchise history because I wanted to make it about four different players or else I think I could have done another Fleury save, another Lemieux bit. Surprising maybe to you, I don't have Crosby here. I have Malkin in mid-backhand beating Cam Ward in the 09 Eastern Finals. I know that series was a complete rout and a joke, but that is still one of the greatest Penguins goals I have ever seen in my life.
That surprises me that Crosby's not on here. But
you know which
I
one I thought
it.
About for him? I thought about the return game against the Islanders after the first concussion where he split the defense much like Lemieux would and backhanded one for a goal. But I don't know. I couldn't go with it there.
I mean, that's fair. Well, if so, would you be able to include his golden goal in the Olympics?
I could, but that would be kind of a technicality just to get Crosby in there because that didn't happen for the Penguins.
Fair enough.
And that was when most Penguins fans were actually rooting against him for the only time in their lives.
Because he was playing for Team Canada.
Yes, playing for Team Canada. We have to make Canada sport our own. Anyway, four Devils frozen moments, please.
Number four is Scott Niedermeyer in, I believe it was 94, the Devils and Rangers at the height of their rivalry. There was a big scrum, and Scott Niedermeyer literally punted a New York Rangers jersey across the ice, and the shot is of him with the jersey on his skate mid-kicking motion. Have you ever seen that one?
I haven't seen it, but I can envision it. You know what's the only thing I remember from that series? And you're going to hate it. Matteau.
Yeah, we don't need to be reminded about that, especially when the Devils drafted his son in the first round. Anyway, number two, I have Adam Henrique in 2012 in the Eastern Conference Finals. His celebration where he's like running on his skates into the corner, but he has this big smile on his face, and you can kind of see everybody's reaction in the crowd just realizing that the Devils are going back to the Stanley Cup Final.
I'm just laughing. Like, I'm giving you Mary Lemieux, Marc-Andre Fleury, and your counter is Adam Henrique. I know Niedermeyer was really good, but Adam Henrique, very funny. All right.
You know what?
This was mainly an exercise so I could rip the Devils. All right, two.
Ken Danico, 2003, lifting the Stanley Cup over his head. Mr. Devil, all-time leader in games played. He has a big smile on his face, and you can count on one hand how many teeth are still left in his mouth.
I like that one. That's a very – I actually can remember that picture now that you're saying it. That's a very good one. I'll actually give you credit. And that's the classic hockey look, a guy who literally just played with no teeth.
Big, bushy beard, a little gray in there, old man, no
teeth.
Yeah,
I've got gray coming in now. I don't really grow good beards, so you never, like, see me actually try to grow one. But I've got gray coming in. It's a bummer, dude. It is a big shock to the old system.
Now, is that why you have the shaved head as well?
No, the shaved head's because my hair looks terrible. I could still have hair, but it looks awful. My wife even says, don't ever grow your hair out. It almost offends me.
Fair enough. And the last one, number one, the 1995 Stanley Cup Final. Scott Stevens, after laying out, I can't even pronounce his first name, Slava Kozlov.
Yes.
Scott Stevens looks over at the Red Wings bench, gives a little wink and a smile, and just smiles at the Red Wings bench after laying out one of their best players. It's not captured on the photo, but right after, Scott Stevens looks at somebody on the Red Wings bench and says, you're next.
Horrifying human being to have to play against, I would imagine. And that series, I was a 10-year-old kid who thought the Red Wings were going to stomp a mud hole in the Devils. Needless to say, that was one of the more shocking outcomes I've ever seen. And probably bad for the game of hockey. Anyway, Borges, thank you for participating in Hockey Talk.
Thank you for making fun of my favorite
team. Yeah, that's right. Well, that's what you were here for on this segment. The real story, though, of course, Coca-Cola replacing RC at PPG Paints Arena. Seismic news in the pop world. Fan weather is brought to you by Sun Chevrolet. It's the Chevy Summer Drive at Sun Chevrolet, up to $7,500 in rebates. Terms and conditions, sunchevy.com, 83. Low of 62 tonight, another pretty comfortable night for sleeping purposes. Coming up next, another Steeler gets ranked in these ESPN rankings. Another Steeler ranked in these ESPN rankings by position, and not exactly a favorable ranking for that player. I'll tell you who it is.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, fantasy football owners. The road to winning your fantasy football championship starts now. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that's going to make or break your fantasy roster. Wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that matter, giving you the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.